Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hi, I'm Bobby Greenberg, and welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Bobby, thank you so much for joining me here today. For those who don't know Bobby, and we're going to learn a lot more about Bobby, she is an Ironman champion. She's done at least 14 full Ironman distance championships. And we're going to go into exactly what that is and how she won again this past October in Hawaii. Bobby, to start off, I do want to thank you for joining me today. We are taping this. We are in different places. Bobby's in Chicago. I'm here in Connecticut. We are going through some very unusual, trying, stressful times. As everyone knows, we are going through a pandemic that all of us alive have never been through before with the coronavirus. Bobby, we're here as inspiration, and that's why I wanted to have you on and was not going to reschedule. Just tell me, how are you coping? What are you doing to stay as you?
Well, I am in the high risk group. I'll be 74 this year, so I can't deny that that's a factor to consider. And so pretty early when we heard about this pandemic and all that it involved, we went into self-isolation, which we're taking seriously. At first it was social distancing, but for the past week, we've been in self-isolation for sure. But that has not kept me from going outside by myself and riding my bike and running. So even though I live in Chicago and all the swimming pools are closed, and Lake Michigan, which is a favorite place to swim, is way too cold at this time, even in a wetsuit. So I am doing online yoga, Pilates, strength training, just following apps that are on the computer. And I'm also running and biking outside by myself.
And I know that being outside is one of the things that really fulfills your life. Being out in the sunshine, being out, whether it's windy, that doesn't stop you from being outside and enjoying. And really for you, that is, that's your vitamins. That keeps you going.
That's very true. So whenever people ask me about my training and all that it entails, I'm so quick to say that I do it because I love being outside, which is true. And it really speaks to me and to my spirit. That's my temple is the outdoors. And while I love it on a sunny day, and it's great when the weather is beautiful and perfect, there's something about the hardships of when it's snowing and raining that also kind of makes it fun and makes me feel like a real badass. Wow, like I'm doing something naughty that my mom wouldn't approve of. And that's fun for me. The other driving force for me that's especially hard at this time is that my other compelling and most compelling reason is for social reasons. I love my girlfriends and guy friends that I train with. That drives me and fulfills me more than a lot of people love being solo and doing it on their own and having time to just think and or be at one with themselves, but I thrive on interacting with other people. So last Saturday, I did meet a friend and we ran together, but we kept our distance and we're both are saying, wait, what? Say it louder. What'd you say? But it still made it fun at least to see each other and run together for that time. Although I'm questioning whether I'll do it again.
Okay.
I did go for a run today by myself, and I love the natural outdoors, but then it started to rain. And in the past, that would not have brought me home. I would have just completed the run and then come home drippy wet. But because I'm aware of immune systems, I turned around as soon as the first drop fell and came home. Because it is also cold. It's 40 degrees or 39 today. So,
okay. So I want to, because this is one of the reasons you're here, is you are an inspiration in so many ways, not just to women, not just to older women, but to younger women also, to see that as you get older, you don't have to get old. There are so many things that you can enjoy, and there are new things that you can do as you get older. Bobby, okay. I understand that you grew up in Chicago. You, back when you were in school, there weren't a lot of competitive sports.
There were none for elementary school, you know, we could play dodgeball or Red Rover or, you know, those kinds of things. But in high school, it was before Title IX. So there weren't any competitive sports that I was able to do as a female. But I was a cheerleader because I was peppy. So
I still are. One of the things, though, when you said there were no competitive sports in high school back then, but you did find your competitive streak in fifth grade.
Yes, when I had the record for knee raises and my name was written on a poster board in a marker that hung in the gym. And I did. I just, all of that. I love that. Just on the playground, I'll race you to the stop sign or whatever. I did have that competitive streak, and kind of still do in ways that no one else would even care about. And here's an example. We were just in Florida on the eighth floor of the condominium, the top floor. And every day I would take the stairs up and take the stairs down. And even when I was carrying packages, unless they were, you know, really bulky or heavy, I would take the stairs every day and time myself the first day when it took me over a minute 12 seconds, I think. And then every day I would try and beat that record, and I was down to 52 seconds by the time that we were leaving. Now, this is a ridiculous contest. There were no other entries in the in that contest, but it made it fun for me. It just was like, I'm going to take two at a time, and I'm going to hold on to the railing. Oh, how fast can I go if I go one at a time without holding on? Just, I make it a game, but I'm also kind of that way. Like, if I get a really good parking spot at the gym, it's like, yay, I won.
The little things. So, you know.
And that, so silly.
But that's what people don't understand. Those little things can make a day, can make a week. That's fantastic. And how fun. I do want to go back. You, so you were a cheerleader. You were a young newlywed in back in 1968, I believe. And then you started playing in tennis tournaments.
Yes.
And you said, I see, quoting you had no strong game, you had no backhand, you just won by keeping the ball in play. And that's how you outlasted all of your opponents.
It's true. People would see that. They'd see that my game was so absurd and that I had no real game except to keep the ball in play, and I'd be lobbing it high and just keeping it going, and that would force an error on their part. And on their part, they would just hit as hard as they could, and it would go out or it would go into the net. So, yeah, and same thing. We started playing tennis around the time when we got married, and we also started skiing, downhill skiing at that time. And you know, that too. It's like I don't have, if you looked at me, no one would ever say I was a pretty skier or had good form. But I could go through anything fearlessly and get down the hill pretty fast, unless it was really difficult terrain. And then I'm not very good at all. But I guess I've always liked being active to some extent. My mother-in-law used to say I was chasing all the time. Where are you chasing?
And you didn't join a gym until what, 2001? What motivated you to join a gym?
So when I was in my mid-50s, I caught a glimpse of myself in a store window and was appalled at my posture. I it took me back where I walked backward, like, wait, was that really me that I saw? And so I joined a gym at that time. And they ask you, you fill out a form and they're like, to lose weight, to gain fitness, whatever. And I remember checking that I wanted to improve my posture, which did happen as a result. And what also happened was right around that same time was when spinning was invented on a stationary bike.
Yep.
And so I started taking those spinning classes. They had a disco ball in our spin studio in the dark. And I loved it. I loved that it was in the dark and that no one's looking to see what anybody else is doing, nor can you even tell what anybody else is doing. I mean, even to this day, however fast people are pedaling or hard, there's no competition there.
That's fantastic. Oh, I need to find one like that. Oh,
yeah. So that makes it fun because you're really just trying to do things. You know, how much sweat can I generate? You know, how big of a puddle do I have under me? And so in that class, the teacher tried to build this camaraderie with the students. And right around the time, maybe within a year or so, they advertised that they're going to have an indoor triathlon, which is a 10-minute swim and a 20 minutes on a stationary bicycle and then 15 minutes on a treadmill. And whomever goes the farthest is declared the winner. So that got me
swimming. Swimming was not your thing back then.
I did not know how to swim. And I expected or planned when I signed up to just walk back and forth in the pool because it was only waist deep. And I thought, well, it doesn't say you have to be horizontal, which actually being horizontal is still a challenge for me, believe it or not. I'm a sinky legger. But I thought, well, as it grew closer to the time, I thought I shouldn't humiliate myself that way. And so I signed up for a workshop to actually learn how to swim. And I was so naive that I thought I really could learn to swim in a weekend because I'm an adult and I'll do exactly what they tell me to do. And I'll be, you know, like an Olympian. Little did I know, and even now it's so technical, but it was enough. And I took a private lesson to learn how to push off the wall. And it was enough that I could stay in the water for 10 minutes going back and forth and did the race in that way.
And how did you perform in that race?
There were only 3 females in the race, but I won.
Congratulations.
And the next second place was like 15 or 20 years younger than me. And then the third place person was another 10 or 15 years younger than her. So it was, that's all that I needed to happen because I think that just made me think, look what you did. And so then I signed up for an outdoor sprint, like a real triathlon that was a sprint that was in open water that was a few months later. And it was probably the most exciting thing that I had done in years and years and years. I was so I couldn't sleep nights. I was so excited about it. And so that was the start. And then after I finished that, I went on to do an Olympic distance. And then the next year I did a half Ironman distance. And then that led to a full because I wasn't getting any younger.
No, please. You just keep getting better and better. But how was that swimming in that first one where it's in open water? And I mean, as you said, you're not that great at the, you know, the horizontal. How did you manage that?
So my goal was just to finish. And okay. You're allowed to wear a wetsuit and in that race. And a wetsuit does keep you more buoyant.
Okay.
And I was ignorant of, you know, taking any risk. I wasn't afraid of water. On vacations, I'd play in water with my daughters in oceans or whatever, in pools. Even though I didn't know how to swim a length, I could do a side stroke or underwater, do like a breaststroke or whatever you people do naturally, doggy paddle. So I wasn't afraid of the water, and I was able to do, you know, the first one was a sprint, which is probably less than 10 minutes in the water, around 10 minutes in the water or so. So I was able to do that distance. and was so, once I got out of the water, I was like, whoa, look at you, yay for you. And then went on to do the rest of the race and was pretty excited.
What do your daughters, what did they think the first time you actually went and signed up for a triathlon?
I don't know that they were already out of the house when I started doing, I did my first Ironman at 59. So my daughters were already out of the house, out of, you know, away from college by the time that happened, even living on their own. So I don't know that it had a big effect on them until I started training for an Ironman. And then they were more aware of it because I was gone from home more often. And they were hearing my husband's side of it, where I have like disappeared for days at a time or hours at a time. And so then they became a little more, aware of what it was that I was doing. And they were definitely excited for me. They, my first race was in Madison, Wisconsin, which Ironman Wisconsin, which is 2 hours from Chicago, so very convenient to train and go to, and also happened to be the school that both my daughters attended. So they were there and very proud of me and excited for me.
So Ironman, what does that consist of?
Okay, so an Ironman is actually the name of a distance, but it's also the name of a brand. So Ironman Races is the brand, but the specific Ironman distance is a 2.4 mile swim, mm-hmm. usually in open water, always in open water. I don't know why I said usually, always in open water. Either an ocean or a river or a lake. And then that's followed by a 112-mile bicycle ride. Mm-hmm. And that's followed by a marathon, which is 26.2 miles.
Is that all?
And you have to complete them all within a certain amount of time in order to go to the next part of it. And it all has to be completed in less than 17 hours that day. So most races start at 7 and officially end at midnight. And if you cross the line at 7 seconds after, you're not an Ironman. Or if you, so for example, the swim, they allow 2 hours and 20 minutes. And if you're 2 hours and 21 minutes, they take your timing chip away and you can't continue on with the race. Same thing with the bike. If you finish the bike after 5:30 in the afternoon, they take your chip away and they take your bike away and they... you can't continue on with the run. And then they sweep the courses also along the way so that if you're not meeting certain times in certain places, they also will take you off the course.
Okay, so, sounds quite easy.
So that part, that can be like, I have a very good friend who's a fantastic cyclist, rides on mountains. He's a great runner. He's done Boston Marathons, but he was a poor swimmer. And even though he had trained for a year and his whole family was there, he was in the water too long and his race ended. So it can be harsh.
Sounds like it. So these
triathlons. But it's fun. Okay.
So the Ironman, the big Ironman championship is held each year in Kona, Hawaii.
Yes.
And it was actually started by... Judy Collins and her husband back
Correct.
In 1977, I believe it was.
Or 1978, I'm not sure.
So it's called Ironman. Why is it called Ironman?
I think originally when they, I don't know why, but they, I had heard that the distances were selected because those were already natural races. There was some race around Oahu that was a bike race, and there was already some existing open water swim in Hawaii, and that was the distance, the 2.4 miles. And then a marathon, of course, was already a known distance. And I think that they just were thinking, and they also were trying to speculate who the best athletes were, whether they were swimmers or cyclists or runners. And I believe that he was in the Navy, but I could be mistaken.
Yes, he was.
About that fact. And so that's, and they just decided, I guess they thought that iron sounded really strong. That's what I heard. And so the first, wasn't a medal, but award was a kind of looked like a tin man, but a little award shaped out of iron that they gave to the winner of the race. I think there were only 12 the first time.
Well, it was taken after a couple of, you know, races that they used to have, but it originally was a 2-day event, which they turned into when Collins started this, they turned into a 1-day event, which is okay, really. So tell me, how do you qualify to go to Kona to be one of the competitors in the world Ironman champion?
So in each of their races, and I believe now they have 70 worldwide, but I'm not positive of that figure, but it used to be much less. And in each race, they award, I don't know, it used to be 50 slots. Now I've read sometimes there's 30 slots to the winners in each age group. And so sometimes in slots that are in age groups that are deep, for example, men that are in their 40s, they might get 2 positions, maybe even a third at some, but I don't think so. I'm not sure anymore about those facts. But in my age group, at each race, only the winner gets to go to Hawaii. And intrigue about going to Hawaii is a big driving force for a lot of people that do Ironman races. And so, you know, a lot of people know that they'll never be able to, because it's so competitive to be such a good athlete, especially in those younger age groups where it's so deep about the number of competitors and how talented they are. So in most parts, there's one slot that's given to a person, and those are the people. So when you go to Hawaii, you're only competing against the best of the best, people who have won their races. And, you know, the field is deep and very competitive. But the first time that I did the Ironman in Madison, Wisconsin, I did win, which entitled me to go to and that was back in 2005. So my first Ironman in Hawaii was in 2006, and I have since qualified 9 times, and this year will be my 8th time actually going to Hawaii.
And October 2019, I believe you won your age group.
Yes.
How many people were in that age group? How many?
So
women?
In 2018, I won, and there were 13 in my age group, which was the largest field that they ever had in the 70-year-old female age group. And this year, there was less. I think maybe 6. So my age group, there's definitely a shortage of females as we age up. So that the field in the 50-year-olds is fantastic of female women, and some of them are faster than the women that are 40 or 45. And then 55 is still pretty large field of very competitive athletes. But the 60-year-olds, it's definitely smaller. 65, smaller yet. 70, smaller yet. And in fact, in the 75-year-old age group in Hawaii, there's, at least until this year, there's only been 2 women that have competed at that age group. Harriet Anderson and Sister Madonna Booter are the only 2 women that have competed in Hawaii that were 75 and above.
Unbelievable. Yet I took a look at your times in this past, in October 2019. The swim was 1 hour, 47 minutes and 2 seconds. The bike, 7 hours, 9 minutes, 12 seconds, and the 26.2-mile marathon run, 4 hours, 59 minutes, and 36 seconds, for a total of 14 hours, 7 minutes, and 11 seconds that you were moving.
Correct.
And also, I mean, I can't imagine moving for 1 hour and 47 minutes, let alone 14 hours and 7 minutes. When I was looking at the results, yes, you won in your age group, which I believe is 70 to 74, but you also, when looking at the results of people in some of the lower age groups, you beat some of them.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah? Okay.
So
Go on.
Well, my swim was terrible. I was one of the last out of the water in my age group. I mean, super slow, which is typical for me. I'm not making any apologies. It wasn't like I was necessarily having a bad day. I'm a slow swimmer. So I came from behind. I was 20 minutes behind second place coming out of the water. And, you know, you come to your bike is on a rack and you take your bike. And I saw all the bikes were gone in my age group because we're all racked together. So I knew I had that deficit. I did make it up on the bike to some degree, but I was still slower than the woman that was in the lead at the time on the bike. She also had a faster bike than me. But I did come from behind and started making up the time on the run. And in fact, have a course record for my age group for the run for having a sub 5 hour marathon. So that was very exciting for me, which I didn't, you know, necessarily know at the time. But my daughters were there. And as I was doing the loop, you do a little loop in town before you go out and kind of disappear on the run and it gets dark and you don't see anybody. They did say that I was, you know, in second place and coming from a 20-minute deficit, but that I looked really strong and that I was already leading by over a mile on the run, and that I would be making up the time and that I should be able to beat the second place person. So it's kind of like I love that second place person was there because it drove, you know, we were working together, not sure. That she knew it, but driving me to try probably harder than I would have to try to pass her. And I did.
So you win. And is there a ceremony, what's your award?
So when you cross the finish line, they used to give you an orchid lei, which was quite beautiful. In the past couple of years, they give you beads that are made out of like little shells and beads from the island.
That's also
quite nice. And then they give you an enormous medal that's probably as big as my head, that if I wore it, I'd probably be bent over because it's so heavy. And they give you a shirt that on the back, it says Finisher Ironman World Championship in Hawaii. They give you a hat. You get a backpack when you sign up. So they give you, you know, a lot of things, some pizza, chicken, I don't know, a massage. So that's all after the race. And then the next day they have a big award ceremony, which is pretty outstanding. They open with Hawaiian fire dancers. They take the island, being on the island, the spirit of the island very seriously. They give you the winning award for the podium finishers. So there's a big jumbotron that's on the stage, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of athletes and their families that come to this awards banquet. And so they announce the podium finishers in each age group, and you come on board and they have this jumbotron that's filming you. And I mean, even during the race, there's like helicopters overhead. There's a lot of fanfare that makes you think it's a big deal. There's a jumbotron at the finish line too. But at the award ceremony, they give you a Umeke bowl, which looks very much like a wooden salad bowl, but it has a brass plaque that announces, you know, that you're first place or whatever. And the bowls get smaller and smaller for second place and third place. And the idea surrounding the bowl is that in the Hawaiian culture, Umeke is a place where you keep treasured items, treasure things that are family treasures. And that in that spirit, they award that to you as your award for placing in the world championship.
So you've won how many of these bowls?
Just 2018 and 2019.
Okay.
I've done the race other times. I came in third in 2016. But other times I was a middle of the packer, but still thrilled just to even be there.
And you have absolutely no intentions of slowing down.
No, none. I think, you know, I'll be probably at some point I'll be waylaid by either an injury or I'll get too slow to make the cutoffs. But until that happens, I'm going to go out fighting, I hope. And I hope it's a long time.
So just on a note to women over 60 who are not motivated, they don't want to go to the gym, it's too much. What do you say to these women?
I would say, I think that I've heard that you have to do something 20 times in order for it to become a habit. So I think they just have to, the first thing I would do is make a plan with a friend, because to me that the idea that, or even in classes at the gym, I take classes and act as though they're taking attendance and I have to be there at a certain time. So it's something that you are accountable to, a person or an event at a certain time that makes you accountable. And that helps me. And I suppose even people, if they're using apps on their phone, sometimes maybe that they can do it with a spouse or a friend in that way. But I would say you need some sort of accountability. At least I do. And the other thing is to start small. So even if you've never, I think running is probably the simplest for everybody. And in these times, especially, it's the simplest because you just have to put on a pair of shoes. And you can start small. You could try and run for 30 seconds and walk for 30 seconds and run for 30 seconds and walk for 30 seconds. Or you can try to run to the end of the block and then walk back. Or you can try and keep increasing the distance or the amount of time that you're running versus walking or not. Or just continuing that way until you can go further and further or whatever your goal is. But I think that once it becomes a habit, it becomes something that makes your that you can, it's palpable. When I come back, no matter how I felt or tired or didn't want to do something, I come back and I'm on a high always. My face is glowing and sweating and I love that whole feeling of pushing myself. And it brings me great joy. For people who say they don't have the time, and I do understand that it becomes something where you just find the time or make the time, because I was a teacher and didn't retire until I was 70, which is quite old in the teaching profession. And I would just get up early before school and I would, you know, go take a swim, master swim at 5:30 in the morning, or go on a stationary bike during the winter and ride indoors at 5:30 in the morning before school, and then go afterward and try to get something outdoors after school. So although no one has to work out that much, people can find the time, and there's so many. I have so many friends. My closest friends have 5 kids, and she finds the time to still include training. So,
well, Bobby, you are an inspiration. As I said before, not just to women in their 70s, women in their 60s, but to young women who think, "Oh, I've never done it, therefore I can't try it." I thank you so much for being a guest today, to having this conversation. Again, especially in these times, Bobby, you are such an inspiration. I look forward to seeing what you do this year.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining me today, Bobby.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.